Kumusta kayo? Ito na ang episode 22. Welcome sa season finale ng Shapers and Shapers, Personalities of Martial Law. This is Bro.
Grabe no, even though we covered 22 personalities and groups, I still think we barely scratched the surface. Ako si Vec.
Hello sa inyong lahat, ako si Lee. And yes, I agree. There's really so much to talk about and we need to continue these conversations.
That is right. So now let's start with our season finale. This is Aaron and you are listening to podcast Conversations in Philippine History, Politics, and Society.
Okay, so for the whole season, we have featured many personalities to showcase the complexities of martial law and the People Power Revolution. For today's episode, our finale, we have a very interesting story that also leads us to show how martial law and the People Power Revolution also figured in other parts of the country other than the capital.
And I think it's also fitting that we end with this episode to also tie in yung discussion natin sa mas contemporary na period na sobrang malapit na sa karanasan natin. So today, we feature Soledad Duterte and try to tackle how her activism during the martial law period could point us to get a glimpse of how dissent happened in Davao and in Mindanao in general.
True. Kaya simulan natin yan sa soundbite na to.
Ang nanay ko was one of the 3 or 4 or 5 marching down the streets of Davao during martial law. In the dark days of martial law, ang nanay ko ang led the Yellow Friday sa babae sa Davao.
Oh, ayan ah. Straight from Digong himself. His mother, Soledad Duterte, was a major force of dissent in Davao noong panahon ng martial law. Especially nung mga times leading to the People Power Revolution.
So, sino ba si Soledad Duterte or Nanay Soling, no? So, she was born on November 14, 1916 sa Agusan, no? So, she was of Maranao descent and she pretty much grew up in Mindanao although her family has ancestry sa Visayas, no? Sa Leyte. Siya ay teacher at nagtapos sa Philippine Normal School or PNU na ngayon at naging part siya ng Bureau of Public Schools noong American period. So, napangasawa ni Soledad Roa, no, si Vicente Duterte. No? So, isang lawyer from Cebu na isa ring politician, no? Kasi naging governor siya ng Davao, no? So itong si Vicente. Together, nagkaroon sila ng 5 anak, no? Kasama na nga si Digong or former president Rodrigo Duterte.
That's right. So Nanay Soling, as we will talk about in this episode, has been regarded as an important figure in the opposition against Marcos in Mindanao. Pero alam niyo na, one thing na I found important to point out is how she is remembered as a strong woman. Interesting itong isang point ng isa sa mga anak niya na si Baby Duterte. Noong tinanong siya ni Howie Severino sa isang interview, why she thinks Soling Duterte is a hero.
How does she become a hero? Sabihin mo nga sa akin kung sinong nanay nagpa-aral ng 4 na anak sa college. Lahat sila nag-aral sa Manila. Tell me, 3 of us went to the United States. Sinong nanay maka-upward niyan? If she were not, kung gihana di ko si ante yan.
So ayan, diba? Nabiyuda kasi si Nanay Soling noong 1968 at kinailangan niyang i-take over ang pangasiwa sa mga negosyo nila at pagkapalaki sa mga anak nila ni Vicente. Kaya nga rin daw talagang close si Digong sa nanay niya.
Bukod dyan, I think important din na i-point out at maibalik ko din at maikonnect dun sa mga nabanggit ni Vec at ni Aaron kanina, that they were a political family. Si Vicente ay dating gobernador. At yung mga negosyo na binabanggit ni Vec kanina ay related sa real estate hanggang sa logging. So in many ways, nakakaangat naman talaga itong mga Duterte.
Totoo yan. So exposed sila rin talaga sa politics. Kaya rin hindi surprising how Nanay Soling also became involved, lalo na noong kasagsagan ng martial law. She became active in helping the communities at syempre nga, voicing as part of the opposition.
To also set the wider context siguro, pahapyawan rin natin ng banggit kung paano ba nag-figure ang martial law ni Marcos Sr. sa Mindanao in general at sa Davao na rin in particular, no? So, at this also shows how the experiences of martial law in the Philippines is complex, no? And very nuanced. Kaya rin nga may competing narratives na lumalabas ngayon, di ba, about memories of martial law. Sabi nga ni Jojo Abinales sa isang op-ed piece, and I quote, no, "My generation of Mindanaoans experienced martial law in different ways," no, end quote, no. So ganun din, no? So as much as martial law in the Philippines was experienced in different ways, ganun din sa Mindanao.
At talagang complicated ang context ng Mindanao kasi we all know na mayroong Muslim secessionist movement noong panahon ni Marcos, the MNLF. And then after an amalgam of factors, including the Jabida massacre, na meron tayong past episode. If our listeners are interested to go back and listen to that, please check it out. Bukod dito, syempre, meron ding presence ng communist insurgency sa region through the NPA.
Kaya naman naging malakas ang presensya ng armed forces sa region, lalo noong panahon ng martial law. Mabalik tayo kay Sir Jojo, Ania, and I quote, "Military abuses made it easier for the rural and urban poor to join the communists. State cruelty also turned priests and nuns into sympathizers of the movement. They would open parish doors to families displaced by military operations and rebels on the run, extend financial support, and form social action and human rights centers to protect their tormented flock. The result was the growth of the Communist Party of the Philippines' largest and the most dynamic regional organization, the Mindanao Commission." End of quote. At syempre, nangyayari lahat ito amidst the economic and political impact ng martial law.
Totoo yan. Kahit nga halimbawa yung mga infrastructure projects ni Marcos sa Mindanao, iniisip rin ng iba noon na gagamitin primarily to coordinate counterinsurgency measures. So Mindanao's economic projects of Marcos included boosting yung plantations and tuna industries. On the other hand, may mga nagkasabi na yung pag-speed up ng corporate exploitation ng resources ng Mindanao, of course, had ravishing environmental effects with limited benefit for the people of the region. Kasi aminin naman natin na among the poorest municipalities and regions in the country are still in Mindanao.
Totoo yan, no? So we can, of course, spend so much more time about this topic, no? Maybe even a whole season also on martial law of Marcos outside Manila, no? So kumbaga, no? So or in the provinces. Pero for now, balikan natin ang Davao kung saan namuhay si Nanay Suling at ang mga Duterte, no? So as we mentioned kanina, when Nanay Suling was widowed, she took on the responsibility of raising the family and managing the businesses while also being a community leader and philanthropist, no? So paano ba naging prominent figure ng opposition si Nanay Suling, no? Magandang tignan natin yung opposition movement sa Davao and sa Mindanao.
So in Davao, one of the considered protest actions actually nakita natin sa isang libing in a similar way sa Manila noong namatay si Ninoy. So sa isang market sa Davao, yung Bangkerohan nagkaroon ng sunog noong 1978. Tapos many civil society groups and development workers came to help during the tragedy. Noong kasagsagan ng sunog, isang development worker, si Karen Guantero, who went to Davao to become a nun, but did not become a nun, and instead became a development worker, namatay siya. And si Karen Guantero ay babad sa poor communities. Kaya noong nasunog ang Bangkerohan, Karen and other volunteers went to help. And then, 3 grenades were thrown to the crowd and Karen unfortunately perished in this tragedy.
At parang sa mga pelikula, ano, the military was the alleged perpetrators of the blast. Kasi nga may mga military operations sa region at malamang ay nare-red tag na rin ang mga development workers. Totoo man o hindi na military ang naghagis ng granada, ang pagkamatay at pagka-injure ng mga volunteers had a major impact sa Davao. At noon ngang libing ni Karen Guantero, ang daming mga residente na nakilibing at in the process ay nag-express ng growing dismay at even dissent, lalo na sa lumalalang oppressive state ng martial law.
So one way of looking at it, Davao opposition movements had a combination of civil society groups and the presence of the communist insurgency and even the secessionist movement. So kumbaga, tinderbox din talaga ng potential ng kaguluhan. Eventually, many civil society groups that were in opposition to the martial law regime would continue to protest. Madaming araw, mga welgang bayan ang naganap sa Davao noon. At lalo noong namatay si Ninoy, bahagi rin ang maraming tao sa Davao sa lumalaking yellow movement. So mayroong Yellow Friday movement na nag-launch ng mga welgang bayan.
Among the civil society groups and public protests or welgang bayan na mga personalities was Nanay Suling. She became a symbol of courage. An anecdote even mentions that she was brave enough to call Enrile out on the atrocities of martial law when Enrile went to Davao.
So with these protests, of course, also came the death of many activists, no? Pero nagpatuloy ang mga protesta at si Nanay Suling ay nag-gain ng prominence, no? Marcos got wind of the opposition movement in Davao and of Nanay Suling, no? He even called up Rodrigo Duterte, who was then a prosecutor in Davao, no? So para lang tanungin kung ano nangyayari sa Davao, no? So ito yung isang interesting anecdote ni Baby Duterte about this incident.
So, he called my brother, Rodrigo, punta ka sa palasyo. Punta sa palasyo, ang gago kong kapatid. He wasn't mayor then. He was a prosecutor, I think. Sabi niya, pwede mo bang pagsabihan yung nanay mo na unti-untiin na may yung kritisismo, ganyan-ganyan. Sabi si Rodrigo, sir, ako, utusan ninyo, lilituring ko yung nanay ko. Ayan ang disciplinaryan sa pamilya, pinapalo nga ako noon eh. Kinakastigo nga ako, pinapaluhod pa ako dun sa altar pag nagkamali ako. Ngayon ako magdikta sa kanya na magkalma siya. Sir, that is impossible. I don't think you can do it, even you can do it to your own mother. Pangaralan ko ang nanay ko. Sabi niya, sir, that's impossible. Who am I? I'm the son.
Happy Mother's Day sa lahat ng mga mommies natin dyan sa Pilipinas. O diba? Shows din talaga na yung relationship ni Digong kay Nanay Suling. And to be fair, no, coming from a mama's boy na gaya ko, mahirap naman talagang sitahin yung mga magulang natin, lalo yung mga nanay natin na nakitaan natin ng authority sa ating buhay. And for Rodrigo, Nanay Suling was a strong force and voice talaga of the opposition sa Davao. I mean, kasama nga siya sa Yellow Friday movement sa Davao noon.
Tama yan. Kaya rin when the dictatorship fell, Cory Aquino actually asked Nanay Suling to be appointed as OIC Vice Mayor of Davao. And many people even urged her to run later on. But she was already in her 70s nung mga panahon na yon, so she begged off and instead told her son, Rodrigo, to take on the role. So yan din ang isang major na simula ng political career ni Rodrigo Duterte.
Pero tuloy-tuloy ang development and activist work ni Nanay Suling, even during Cory's time, ha? The Yellow Friday movement became the pulso ng bayan. At actually, as reported sa isang profile piece on Nanay Suling published ng Vera Files, she actually later on declared her break from supporting Cory owing to the economic crisis and continuing problems. Sabi nga niya sa statement niya na pinublish ng Mindanao Times, and I quote, "The country is facing the worst economic crisis that has fallen on us, Filipinos. Never in history did we ever have the series of calamities from disastrous typhoons to destructive earthquakes, which flattened many of the buildings in Luzon. The highest price of the fuel we ever have, which never happened even during the 20 years of President Marcos, has finally brought us down to economic ruin. While we do not blame you, President Aquino, for all these happenings, but it is now a fact that we need a leader who can maneuver to the right direction to save the country from economic collapse. We are therefore appealing to you as a kind president to step down and let Vice President Laurel carry the work of nation building. He has been in public service for quite a long time. we shall experience a new hope to a new leader until the election of 1992. President Aquino, if you pity the poor in our midst, now is the time to show your benevolence. Give way to one stronger than you to face the trials. Today's condition is indeed too difficult for you to handle. Even now, many leaders refuse to accept positions in your cabinet. This may be a sign that your people lost confidence in your administration. Madam President, please save our country for the sake of the new generation to come after us. This honorable act of yours will be a good Christmas gift to us. Tomorrow may be too late. End of quote.
Kaya rin complex character si Nanay Suling kasi some writers would actually argue that she herself was very much adept with politics and alam niya yung transactional maneuvers na kailangan gawin. Kaya in many ways, the Dutertes are indeed consummate politicians simula pa noon.
Nonetheless, I think we still need to underscore the place of Nanay Suling in serving as a major force of dissent, at least noong height ng campaigns against the dictatorship. No? So she was an organizer and brave voice of the opposition in Davao. That we can at least take note.
All right. So maybe we can close the episode on that note and also our season. So throughout Shapers and Shakers, we have explored the complexities of martial law and the People Power Revolution through the lives of the people we featured.
Pero katulad ng nabanggit natin, marami pang kailangang pag-usapan at kailangang panatilihing buhay ang conversations about this period of our history.
Pasalamatan natin ang ating mga listeners sa pagsama sa isa na namang season ng podcast. We hope you continue supporting us and of course, we always look forward to your comments and suggestions.
Follow us sa aming social media pages sa FB, X, Instagram, LinkedIn at syempre sa YouTube Podcast TV. Until the next season, maraming salamat and have a good